On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer the following questions. Can the Knicks overcome the NBA curse that's haunted every recent finals champion? Which Eastern teams can challenge New York's reign? And Draymond re-signs with Golden State, but is it already too late for the Warriors' title hopes with Stephen Curry? All this and more coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and we do this every week here at Yahoo Sports YouTube. Now, reminder for folks, we have a Yahoo Sports NBA channel on YouTube, which you can subscribe by hitting that subscribe button there, Yahoo NBA, where you can get Kevin O'Connor's show, you can get the Dunker Spot, as well as this show every time it goes live. We did this live on Friday, Dan. That was kind of a crazy episode because we were ready to start the show on a kind of a similar adjacent LeBron topic. And then we got the news that LeBron was going to Philly. So we're going to still kind of talk about this story because it's kind of a big deal, right, Dan? Like, feels like everyone's head's been spinning since Friday trying to digest that LeBron James is a Sixer. How you doing, man?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think I've gotten my arms around it in a better way since we last spoke, using the intervening few days. And I think one of the things we talked about was kind of like, this feels seismic, but is it, right? Like, how dramatically does it change the championship picture? And we've seen in the days since, like, the odds makers, Vegas, the over-unders, the win totals, et cetera, they've kind of weighed in for how much it changes things. And I think a lot of that depends on the defending champs, which I think is kind of where we're going to start today. So why don't you hit me with it, Tom? What is this week's big number?
Yeah, this week's big number is minus 3.9. That is the average win change for the defending champs in their repeat quest over the last 10 seasons. So what I did was I wanted to see with the Knicks in mind, are we going to be experiencing a little bit of a championship hangover for Jalen Brunson and company? Considering that over the last 10 seasons, we have not had many repeat champions. We have 8 new champions every year, and it's not just 8 champions over the last 8 seasons. And it's not, Dan, just about the fact that they're struggling in the postseason, although that is the case in many instances. In the regular season, the defending champion sees, on average, their win total drop from the previous season in which they won the title by an average of about 4 wins. And so when you're talking about the cost of winning a championship lately, it does appear that in the regular season, it's a little bit harder to recapture the magic of the previous regular season. Of course, the Knicks weren't a juggernaut in the regular season, being the number 3 seed last year with 53 wins in the Eastern Conference behind Detroit and Boston. But doing the same math, we can expect, or it seems like given recent history, we can kind of pencil in a 49-win season for the Knicks, which in last year's standings, that would be good for about 5th in the Eastern Conference. I don't think people would agree that that's kind of the conventional wisdom here, is that the Knicks would be taking a step back by 4 wins. But every champion of the last 10 years, everyone seems to think, yeah, they have a really good shot at repeating, but they take a step back in the regular season more often than not. And then in the postseason, we're seeing that 6 of the last 7 champions have not gotten out of the second round. Last year's Thunder, they won the championship in 2025. And then the following season, last year, they fell to the San Antonio Spurs. And that was like way better than a lot of the more recent teams. The Celtics, the Nuggets, the Warriors, the Bucks all lost in the conference semis. And the Lakers, after their bubble championship, didn't even get out of the first round. So, Dan, there's a lot to kind of think about here about the New York Knicks championship repeat quest. And I think, you know, given that LeBron James is now a Sixer, Giannis is in Miami, Toronto is still waiting to hear if they're going to, you know, take Kawhi Leonard off the hands of the Clippers. There's a lot of changes at the top of the East, and we've got to make sure that we keep in proper perspective. The Knicks just had one of the greatest postseason runs in NBA history. Is it possible that it's hard to, you know, recapture lightning in a bottle twice here with the New York Knicks? What do you make of that last, you know, 10 years? We've got 8 new champions in the last 8 years, but also the repeating, the team trying to repeat takes a step back in the regular season.
Yeah, I think it makes sense, you know, anecdotally, right? It passes the smell test that if you've got a team that didn't just have to survive the 82 game marathon, but also an additional 2 months, you know, 20 odd games of playoff basketball that goes, you know, to the middle of June. And then everybody else has been off resting for longer or had more opportunity to work on their game or whatever, like the Knicks, and then the post championship. I mean, obligations might be too strong a word for like showing up on every late night show and, you know, like going to Saturday night's main event and choke slamming guys and things like that. But like the things that the Knicks have done in the aftermath of that, it kind of does extend their season and cut into their offseason. So there, you could kind of understand that where that would come in for a team, right? Like less time to sort of rest, less time to prepare, a little bit more fatigue, a little bit more action kind of going into it. And I think that will be the interesting component to watch for the Knicks. One sort of counter caveat here, the Pythagorean win expectation for the Knicks. So basically a, you know, nerdy formula that's essentially like how many wins you would be expected to get in a regular season based on your point differential. Basically, the Knicks underperformed their Pythagorean expectation last year by 3 wins. They had the point differential of a 56-win team. So maybe it all comes out in the wash. Who knows? If they drop off by 3 or 4 wins and they're still a 54-win team, who knows? Or 52-win team, whatever. That could be. But I think the thing to keep an eye on for the Knicks, it's not just that they had this extended regular season where they, and the extended postseason rather, where they played deep into June. It's that they also went to the Eastern Conference Finals the year before that, which means their main guys have all played a ton of minutes over the last 2 seasons. I went back and I sort of dug through this morning, and over the last 2 seasons, all 5 Knicks starters, so that's Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns, Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, and Mikal Bridges, all of them have played more than 6,000 total minutes, regular season and postseason combined. I wasn't able to go through every roster, but the only other players that I found that went the top 6,000 minutes in that span anywhere else in the league are Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and James Harden. So 2 guys in the rest of the league, the Knicks' entire starting five, over 6,000 minutes. Wait,
so the 5 of the 7 are on the Knicks?
Yes. All the entire Knicks starting five, which I know, I guess because they shouts out to Tom Thibodeau, but the entire Knicks starting five, including headlined by Mikal Bridges, who we know, the Iron Man, he never misses a game. He hasn't missed a game since he was 4 years old or whatever. He has played more than 7,000 minutes over the last 2 regular season and postseasons combined, about 1,000 more than anybody who's not on the Knicks. So all that to say, at some point, the bill comes due, right? And you know, as you went back over and you're looking at some of those teams where they made it to the finals, but then they won the championship and then took a step back. I think injuries wind up being a common tale in a number of those, you know, where you've got, you know, it's Aaron Gordon's hamstring or it's the Warriors guys, you know, KD and Clay getting injured at the end of the finals, or, you know, we've seen, you know, last OKC year with the Thunder. Year.
Yeah.
Yep. Jalen Williams missing a ton of time, Chet missing some time, you know, like multiple other starters, Isaiah Hartenstein missing a bunch of time. This is where the bill comes due. And that will be the challenge moving forward for the Knicks. On the plus side, continuity, right? You're bringing, because of what they were able to do, the only significant piece of their core that they lost in the offseason was Mitchell Robinson going to the Boston Celtics. They bring back all their starters plus Deuce McBride plus Landry Shamet. So you have that continuity. We reached this new level in the playoffs and we kind of have the institutional memory of how to get back there. The problem is going to be you don't get to just start again in mid-April, right? You got to go through the whole rest of the way, and there's been an awful lot of tread taken off those tires these last 2 years.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I had no idea that the Knicks literally have like 70% of the high minutes guys in the league over the last 2 years, which, you know, like you said, Tibbs owes a lot of credit to that. Blame, depending on your perspective on things. But I also wonder about Mike Brown. Do you think Mike Brown, looking at this without Mitchell Robinson and Drummond's going to be, you know, backing up Karl Anthony Towns this year, do you see Mike Brown recognizing this tax? Because he's been on championship aspiring teams and knows kind of how tough it is, the grind to come back in the repeat quest when he was on the Warriors staff or on the Spurs staff or, you know, being with LeBron all of those years. He knows it takes a huge toll. And it's not even just getting back to the finals. Like, we went through such a spoiled run with it when it came to Cleveland and the Warriors, where LeBron was going against the Warriors every year in the finals, pretty much. But it's not even just the finals. Damn, of the last 15 conference champions, none of them have repeated. This isn't just about winning a title in repeat quests. It's also getting back to the NBA Finals. It's really challenging. So for the Knicks, I think it's worth in this episode today, I want to kind of like go back and wonder or go back and review the Eastern Conference, the top of the Eastern Conference, because what we're seeing is with all the new additions at the top of the East and Tyrese Haliburton coming back to Indiana, as much as you want to say they should kind of downshift in the regular season, that also means they're going to have to lose some ground in the standings if you're going to see a lot more minutes for Deuce McBride or Jordan Clarkson or Landry Shamet basically taking a lot of the bulk of those minutes in the starting rotation if they're going to try to manage that workload. So knowing that the rest of the Eastern Conference has ramped up, do you think Mike Brown is going to say, look, Jalen, Kat, we're going to have to load manage, whether it's going to be for full games or if it's just going to be like, instead of playing 32 minutes a night or 30 minutes a night, we're going to really look for pockets in the schedule or pockets within games that we're not going to overextend yourself before April comes around?
I think that he'll certainly explore. I think one of the things we learned about Mike Brown last season was that experimentation and willingness to try stuff was kind of baked into the argument for hiring him. And even, you know, I can remember being there opening night against Cleveland at the Garden, and, you know, you open up, I think it was the start of the second quarter, and it's Tyler Kolek, rising sophomore point guard who barely played in his rookie season, and he's getting a shot on the ball, you know. Over the course of the season, Mo Diawara, their second round pick, getting significant run. Ariel Hukporti playing a role on the nights where, you know, Mitchell Robinson was being load managed, or just they needed another body behind Karl Anthony Towns. And so there are some of those guys. You know, they just drafted another second round pick, Tyler Nickel, shooter there. You know, Jack Hale, their second round pick, the German guard. Who knows if he actually comes to the roster? They've got some young guys who really haven't gotten to play very much. But Brown has given those guys opportunities to soak up some minutes, to get some run. If those guys have shown that they've earned some rotation minutes, I wouldn't be surprised to see, especially in the early part of the season, while your vets, the ones that were you really rode hard all the way through the end of the finals, while those guys kind of slow play into the season, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that was the way it works. But then, to sort of the broader point here, if you are doing that with a picture, your sort of longest view in the room, your sights set on April, May, and June, that's how a 53-win team becomes a 48-win team sometimes, right? Like, and if you could be in a situation where, we know we're thinking about, we don't need to be the number one seed. We just want to get into the tournament. But then as the rest of the East has risen around the Knicks, and as other teams might have an opportunity to take a big surge up the standings, that's how you can wind up in an unfavorable matchup, maybe even losing out on home court in round one if you're not careful or if you take a significant injury. So all of those things are things that Brown and the coaching staff and the front office are going to have to kind of gauge here. But I wouldn't be surprised at all to see, as you're saying, like, we really understand we got to use the whole roster to make sure that we've got the guys we really need ready to go when we need them most.
Yeah, that graphic right there. I want to go back to that the 2020 Lakers. They dropped 12 games in the standings. You know, this is prorated, so in some of these COVID shortened seasons, we're prorating for 82 games in the season. So the Lakers, when they won the chip, their prorated record was 60-22, and then they won 48 games the next season. There's not a lot of instances where a team made a big jump, like that they were using the momentum of winning a title into the next season. You got the Nuggets adding 4 wins in 23-24 season, but the majority of them are taking either a small step back or a pretty sizable step back in the standings. And it's not really the case that, you know, it seems pretty obvious that title winning teams don't gut their team the next season and thereby explaining why they're taking a spill in the standings. You know, you think about the Kawhi Leonard Toronto Raptors as the shining example of a team that wasn't able to keep their core together. Kawhi Leonard leaving to go to the Clippers in the following in that summer, and they also lost Danny Green. The 2023 Nuggets, they did lose Bruce Brown after winning the title and leaning more on Christian Brown on that team. The 2021 Milwaukee Bucks with P.J. Tucker and Dante DiVincenzo leaving the squad after they won a title. P.J. Tucker was like low-key a huge piece of that championship run. I think he was fourth in minutes on that squad and being their kind of like perimeter physical defender. And then with the Lakers, they lost starter Danny Green, another instance of Danny Green leaving a title team and hopping and being the Robert Horry of this era. There isn't a large number of roster turnover teams to explain why they would have this big dip. And some of it is that load management that we're talking about is just pulling off a little bit off that gas pedal, knowing that it's going to be really tough to have that kind of energy and that playing with that kind of force and physicality once the postseason comes around. And they've fallen short lately. It is, you know, as Adam Silver likes to call it, there's a lot of parity now, and teams have a much better shot at winning a championship. Whether that's due to the CBA and the flattening of the CBA and the salary cap, or if it's just injuries piling up and fatigue piling up. I think it's probably more that is the case, is that it's just harder in today's NBA, the fast up-tempo pace coupled with the three-point shot and all the different schemes that bigs are having to deal with now defensively, covering such a larger area onto the floor, that it's just harder now than ever to kind of get back to that mountaintop. We had an incredible run between Steph and LeBron, but now you're seeing it is a much flatter championship race. And it just, every team, Knicks fans out there, every team after they win a title feels like they have a really good shot at repeating. And so this is not unique. This is looking historically over the last 8 years, 8 new champions and 15 new conference champions. And so it's going to be tough for the Knicks to get back to that NBA finals. Not to say they can't do it, but LeBron's in Philly. Giannis is in Miami. Kawhi Leonard hoping to be in Toronto. Tyrese Halliburton back in Indiana. Paul George in Boston, along with Mitchell Robinson. There's a lot of change at the top of the East. So, Dan, I think we should go and do a deeper dive on some of these teams here with three little numbers coming from you right after the break. Dan, the big number this week is -3.9. That is the average win change for the champs. In the last 10 years, they see basically their win total fall by 4 wins on average, as much as 12 with the Lakers in 2020. We're thinking about this with the New York Knicks trying to win another championship, which is an interesting sentence that I don't know, as I've been covering the league over the last 10 years, that I would ever say, hey, the Knicks have a repeat chance here. But a lot of teams in the East, we're focusing on the Eastern Conference here, because we haven't had a repeat Eastern Conference champion since, 2018, 2019, yeah, something like that. It's been a long time.
2018 is the end of the LeBron run there, yeah.
Yes, LeBronto. LeBron is now going to Philadelphia. I wonder, are you going to hit the LeBron to Philadelphia here for your first little number?
I am. I'm going to zag on it a little bit, though. Our first little number this week is 106.1. Should be a really bad fever, but it was a very good defensive rating. The Philadelphia 76ers defensive rating in the first round against Boston when Joel Embiid was on the floor. The Sixers' first round upset of the Celtics came during what was likely the best week of Embiid's, yet another injury react season for Embiid, period that saw him not only bulldoze every defender that Boston threw at him in the front court, but also saw Philly defend at a level that would have been a number one defensive rating in the NBA over the course of the season during his minutes. And yes, small sample size. And yes, three-point variance. Boston shot 33% from three-point range when he was on the floor, although they barely shot better than that when he was off it. Celtics really didn't shoot well in that first round series. Big part of why they lost. But even after coming off of an emergency appendectomy, yet another in the myriad trials of Joel Embiid over the years, just before the start of the postseason, and he got back midway through the series, he did seem like he was moving better than we were used to seeing from him on the defensive end, up until in game 7 when Tyrese Maxey got knocked into his I think left leg, and that led to him being questionable for game 1 against the Knicks. And they, as we talked about on the show, went at him mercilessly, and every time he was on the floor during that 4-game sweep in the second round at the hand of the Knicks. At this point, projecting Joel Embiid's health is a fool's errand, and yet I am a fool. So we did see a small sample in which the Sixers defended well with him on the court, well enough to beat a favored opponent. Given all the additions around him on the offensive end, whether they can defend well enough with him out there seems to be the big deal. Do you believe we're going to be able to see Joel Embiid defend at that level against a team like the Knicks in the next postseason?
I don't believe. That's my big risk here is I don't see Embiid playing at an entire championship run at that level, 106.1, the defensive rating you're citing. I'll believe it when I see it. And that's the big risk here for LeBron James is he's pinning a lot of this on the health of Joel Embiid, who's played 96 games over the last three seasons, an average of 32 games in the regular season. And as we saw, another postseason riddled with injuries. A lot of these injuries, like the Bell's palsy, it's just what seems to be pure bad luck and not necessarily indicative of like tired wheels or low tread on those tires. But I would say that we got more information from Dave McMenamin in an ESPN report that dropped on Wednesday morning. He talked to Bob Myers about Joel Embiid and LeBron deciding to team up with Joel. And Myers told ESPN, when I went on the podcast, that would be Rich Paul and Max Kellerman's podcast. Sure. That's what I meant in terms of like he was he believed that LeBron James, the best spot for LeBron was the Sixers because Embiid was there and they were championship ready because a lot of it was Embiid. And Bob Myers says, you can disagree, anybody can, and you could argue Embiid. And what I would say is, sure, there's always health risks, but I would take the chance of a healthy Embiid over you go somewhere else. Other guys can get hurt too. That's what Bob Myers said to Dave McMenamin about the Embiid question. Certainly, there is a chance that the other superstar in someone else's team gets hurt. But like, yeah, there's a chance that you'll get snow in the summer in New York, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the same chance as somewhere else. And he's acknowledging that that Joel Embiid is going to get a lot more flack for his injury risk. But you know, as we see in the league, there's a lot of injury risk with superstars. I just can't get on board with the idea that Embiid's injury risk is the same as everybody else. And I think Bob Myers secretly knows that, but he can't say that publicly, that he's a lot larger of an injury risk than any other superstar in the league. I would venture to say he's the largest injury risk in the league. I mean, coming off an Achilles tear, Damian Lillard, Tyrese Halliburton, Jason Tatum, even them, I would still feel better about. I would take the over on their games played compared to Joel Embiid. And I can't get there. And in the report, David McMenamin did say that when talking to Mike Gansey, the general manager for the Philadelphia 76ers, it came up that Joel Embiid had talked to LeBron James. They were teammates on the Paris Olympic team. And Joel Embiid was like, yeah, I talked to him. I couldn't really get a gauge on what he was feeling, but I just told him that I'm healthy. That's a good sign. That Embiid is confident enough in his body coming off of that that Knicks series that he feels like he's healthy and going to be able to bring it on home for LeBron. But I know the history of guys that size playing 32 games on average over an extended period of time. It's not pretty, but hopefully the big man can stay healthy for the LeBron's championship run. I'm not overly confident in it.
Yeah, if not, we're going to be seeing a lot of Ariel Hakpourty and Adem Bona or insert center that Mike Gansey is going to have to trade for before early February to be ready for that eventuality. Our second little number this week is plus 12.3. That's how many points per 100 possessions by which the Celtics have outscored opponents over the last four seasons, regular season, postseason, all of it, when Jason Tatum and Derek White are on the floor and Jaylen Brown is not. That courtesy of our pals at PBP Stats. So an extended multi-year, thousands of minutes sample, plus 12.3 when you got Tatum and White on the floor and Brown off of it. We've talked quite a bit about the prospective pros and cons of the Celtics swapping out Jaylen Brown for Paul George. But it's worth noting, as we know, we talked about everything settling after the LeBron decision. The odds makers still project Boston as a 50-plus win team and right in mix with Philly right behind New York for the East crown. You zoom out and there's like a glass half full way to look at this, which is you basically swap Jason Tatum in for Jaylen Brown, like a healthy Tatum in for Brown, and you added Paul George and Mitchell Robinson to the Celtics. And that's kind of a pretty good sounding team. So amid all the shock of the Jalen Brown trade, did that kind of overshadow the possibility that the Celtics are going to be right back in the mix to be a legit contender next year?
I think they're going to be a legit title contender. And I think for the Knicks, they're right near the top of the list, the Celtics, teams that I think they're going to be looking at as the competition there for the East crown. I like what the Celtics did this offseason. I think the Jalen Brown trade, I think as much as it was a bad PR move in terms of trading a finals MVP in his prime, I do think that there is a strong potential here for the Boston Celtics to actually be as good, if not a little bit better, than they were last year in the regular season, given that they're going to have a lot more extra possessions with Mitchell Robinson and winning the possession game, as we've talked about ad nauseum on this show. Joe Mazzulla wants to keep the turnovers down, get the shots up, and get as many bites at the apple as he can offensively. And Mitchell Robinson, adding him in place of Jalen Brown, is a big reason why. Jalen Brown has one of the highest turnover rates in the league for a high usage guy. And I think you're going to see the Knicks and the Celtics be right there at the top of the East. And I think with Jason Tatum back and healthy for a full season, we've talked about Peyton Pritchard and the leap that I expect him to make into an all-star caliber player, if not an all-star, legit all-star next season. I think you're going to see the Boston Celtics with Mitchell Robinson. It's going to get like the Game Time app. I'm going to have to use this Game Time app if they go to Christmas for some of my buddies up north. I'm projecting that the Knicks are going to be playing the Spurs, but if they go Knicks Celtics on Christmas Day, I know that a lot of people are going to want to go to that game. So make sure if you do that, go utilize that Game Time app. It's great to do some marketplace, you know, comparisons. And if you want to get the best tickets at the best rates, you want to use that. Because I look at this, Dan, we kind of projected it. There really isn't a bad way if you're going to go for Christmas Day games like Knicks Celtics, Knicks Sixers, Knicks Spurs, Knicks Heat. Any of those tickets at Madison Square Garden, if they're going to bring it back to the Garden, is going to be nuts. But like Celtics versus Knicks might be the best one of them all. If that matchup happens, Mitchell Robinson going back against his other team, it's I don't know. I feel like people are sleeping on the Celtics next year.
Yeah, it's easy to see the downside, right? To cap the glass half empty. The more pessimistic look is sure. Paul George might be a better fit for the possession maxing ideology that Joe Mazzulla wants to institute, but he also misses a ton of time, right? And has a significantly older player with significantly longer injury history and misses a ton of time. Mitchell Robinson, tailor-made for we want to hammer the offensive glass, generate extra possessions. You know, you always talk about the dagger threes after the offensive rebound kick out to the three-point line. That's something the Knicks have drilled and he's great at. He also misses a ton of time, right? And like only made it through last season as healthy as he did because he was held out of a lot of back-to-backs and had his minutes really carefully managed. So now he's going to be a starter. Are you pushing him longer? Does that have negative impacts? But I think broadly, the Celtics, yeah, like you, and I think that's why you see the kind of Vegas overall view of this being like the 7-game sample against a Sixers team that finally got a healthy Paul George a few weeks and a healthy Embiid week at exactly the right time is less relevant to us than what we saw before that and what we have seen for years with Jason Tatum. And I think that's the what is informing the idea of the Celtics being another 50-plus win team and right back in the mix again there. Our third and final little number this week, we're going to go right up to the top of the standings in last year's Eastern Conference. Third little number is 84. That is the total number of points by which the Detroit Pistons beat the New York Knicks across 3 regular season meetings last season. They were 3-0 in the regular season against the Knicks. They killed the Knicks in a 31-point blowout in January, a 38-point blowout right after the trade deadline, both of those in Detroit. And then when they shifted to New York right after the All-Star break, 15-point win at MSG. Jalen Duren didn't play in any of those games. So that was your Isaiah Stewarts and your Paul Reeds and everybody else kind of making life miserable, particularly Cade Cunningham, who kind of got wherever he wanted and did whatever he wanted against the Knicks. Asar Thompson, Ron Holland, the perimeter defenders they got there, really making life difficult on Jalen Brunson. Knicks just didn't really seem to have any answers. It didn't wind up mattering in the postseason because, yes, the version of the Knicks we saw in the springtime was different than the one we saw in January and February. And yes, the last time we saw Detroit, they were unimpressive in their opening round win against the Orlando Magic, and they were really disappointing in defeat against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second round. But I think it's easy because they haven't done very much, right? They swapped out Tobias Harris for John Collins. They added Isaiah Joe. They, you know, not a ton of super exciting stuff. Taurean Prince and Gary Harris are here, but all those guys can shoot. And we just saw, you put shooting around Cade Cunningham, you win 60 games. And Jalen Duren, for all the sturm and drang about his free restricted free agency, he's probably going to be back there, right? So are we overthinking 60-win team that just had the best point differential in the conference? They're probably still somebody we should be thinking about in terms of a legit title contender.
Totally. Detroit is just chomping at the bit to get another shot at the New York Knicks, hopefully in the postseason for them. I mean, the usage rate for Cade Cunningham in those matchups, he was a monster. 37.9 usage rate, his highest usage rate for against any team in last year's regular season. Cade Cunningham, his eyes get huge when he goes against the Knicks. Averaged 27 points, 11 assists, and 5 rebounds. 52% from the floor, 50% from downtown, and of course, getting to the free throw line at will. This is something that I feel like maybe one of the most underrated storylines in the league is, like, the Pistons won 60 games last year, and no one seems to think that they're going to be able to duplicate that this year. I know the East got better. The Knicks, the regular season is different than the postseason. But if Cade Cunningham's healthy, and he wasn't for the entirety of last season, obviously he got the exemption to be included on first-team All-NBA, playing in 64 games. But if he's playing around that next year, it's going to be very hard for me to believe that they're not going to be right in the thick of the East. So yeah, great point by you that we shouldn't be sleeping on the Detroit Pistons this year, because as long as Cade Cunningham's healthy and Jalen Duren hopefully bouncing back and getting back with the regular season groove that he was last year with the Pistons, assuming he comes back on that deal. Man, we're not that far away from perhaps the Pistons upsetting the Knicks in like round two next year, given that they just dominated the matchups last year. We cannot overlook this.
Ron Holland's 21, Jalen Duren's 22, Asar's 23, Cade's 24. Like, the young guys they really like should be on the upswing here, on the ascent. And so there is, I know it is a kind of a cope tactic for a fan base of a team that hasn't done very much in the offseason, but internal development, internal improvement should continue to be a really important part of the Pistons story. And if, I mean, obviously, I think expecting the kind of year over year leaps we've seen the last 2 years, they only play 82 games. So I don't know how much more you can jump up after what they did for being as bad as they were under Monty Williams to where they've jumped the last couple of years. But I think that expecting a dramatic decline, especially, like, just think about is anecdotal, but think about the history in the NBA, right? This is how teams usually do it. You finally get all right, you get to the playoffs, you lose in the first round. You get better than that, you would win a playoff series, you advance, and you lose in the second round. Okay, you're taking your lumps. You're learning how to win this time of year. You're getting this experience in the seasoning. I think expecting 60 wins might be tough, but expecting the Pistons to just completely backslide and not have an opportunity to put what they've learned over the last couple of postseasons into practice and make that sort of extended run, I think that would sort of flout what we've seen very often in NBA history. This could be a good opportunity for the Pistons to continue that upward trajectory, just like so many young teams have in the past.
We haven't really talked about the Heat with Giannis, maybe the best player in the East, period, going to be with the Miami Heat. We talk about Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton ramping up for another postseason run after they beat the Knicks in the previous year to get to the NBA Finals against OKC. You know, we talk about eight new champions. It's going to be so hard for the Knicks just to get back into the NBA Finals, given how good the Eastern Conference is. And with all of those big wings that seem to be tailor-made to go at the New York Knicks in Toronto, when you got Kawhi Leonard, and now with Allen Graves after a strong summer league, the rookie looks like he's going to fit really nicely in that organization. You've got Cleveland, of course, not getting LeBron James, but certainly they're not going to go quietly, I don't think, in the East. We'll see what happens with Donovan Mitchell and James Harden in that backcourt. Of course, right now, as we're recording this, no James Harden deal as of yet to come back to Cleveland, but I expect that to be formalized at some point here. But it is crazy to think that the Knicks, after they just won the championship and had a shortened offseason, no Mitchell Robinson. I think it's worth looking at whether they are, you know, heavy favorites to come out of the East again. We talked about it last week. I would put them as the slight favorite, and I would actually put the 76ers probably in a different tier than the New York Knicks. If I'm gonna kind of right now, as we sit here at the end of July, the rosters are not 100% set, but I would probably put the Knicks on their own tier and then like five teams. You got Detroit, Miami, Boston, Philly, Toronto. I mean, you could go six deep, Cleveland, maybe even Atlanta. That's seven teams right there that are going to be angling to take down the Knicks. Dan, it's going to be an awesome regular season to try to see how the East supremacy will shake out. Because I don't think you can put it in marble right now that the Knicks are going to get it into the NBA Finals next year. Certainly not the case looking at recent history with 15 different conference champions out of the last 15. So, Dan, there's another team that we have serious questions about. It's the Golden State Warriors did not make any additions on their roster. They did not get LeBron James. They brought back Draymond Green. We're going to kind of make some sense, or try to make some sense, of the Golden State Warriors as Stephen Curry continues to dominate when he's on the floor. Joe Lacob, Mike Dunleavy, and the organization watch Bob Myers leave and land LeBron James in Philadelphia, and they just seem to be spinning in their tires. We're going to talk about all that coming up right after the break. All right, we featured a lot of Golden State Warriors on some of those graphics earlier in the show. Go check that out about the Knicks' chances of repeating next year. It's going to be really challenging given how good the East is. And of course, there's OKC and San Antonio on the other side. Last year, Steve Kerr kind of said, I think he wasn't expecting it to blow up as much as he did, but he kind of felt like he didn't feel like they were in the same tier as OKC and San Antonio, that where they're kind of transitioning away from being a legit title contender. Comes back on a new deal to coach this Golden State Warriors going forward, but it's going to be literally the same exact group as we saw last year. As of now, there is no real addition to the team. Draymond Green returning on a one-year deal at $27.7 million, according to the Mark Stein at the Steinline Substack, confirming ESPN report from Anthony Slater that he is, you know, whether he has an implied no trade clause or a real no trade clause, whatever, Draymond Green is back. And they just seem like, Dan, like they don't really have much to offer Stephen Curry in a championship run. And I'm sure it's caught your eye.
Very much so. This graphic from our pal Automatic NBA on Twitter is wild. You see the logos of all 30 NBA teams, and next to them, you see the faces, if you're watching on YouTube, of all of the players they've added in trade or free agency this offseason. Only one team hasn't added anybody, and it is the Golden State Warriors. There are zero faces next to that Warriors logo, and that is a pretty stark depiction of the stasis in which this organization is now stuck, right? And you know, there's, you know, reporting all over the place about this, right? And you know, you're right. You noted Steve Kerr saying, "I never really thought we were in it." In the aftermath of LeBron signing in Philly, and then the discussion being that the Jaylen Brown trade made that a more enticing destination for LeBron, it sort of invited the question of like, why did the Warriors not try to go get that done at the trade deadline? And there's been some reporting that like maybe they could have, or they had some discussions about that, but then they didn't get all the way across the finish line, whether it's because the asking price in Boston at that point was a lot higher than it wound up being in the final analysis, or if there was, I think Logan Murdoch at the Ringer had reported that it was just like some lack of consensus about whether Jaylen Brown might be like the bridge guy to get them to the next era. The next era, that's the point to discuss here. We are thinking in Golden State an awful lot about what comes next after Stephen Curry. And that has kind of been the case over the last handful of years, even as Stephen Curry is still an all-NBA player, is still the player who delivered that franchise, is still the player who is capable of, when he is on the floor, winning a playoff series, getting you to a championship a few years ago, being in a situation where you can be the best player on the floor against damn near anybody, you know, right? Even, you know, in a situation like the play-in tournament last year, we saw him do that against Kawhi Leonard in the Clippers in that first play-in game win, where Steve Kerr said, you know, for a night, it felt like we were us again. And the problem in Golden State right now is way too few nights on which they feel like they used to. And that's what we're running into now. I wrote about this on Monday, the feeling of like Stephen Curry talked with Marcus Thompson III at The Athletic about sort of understanding this is the reality we live in. Like, we don't live in an alternate universe where all of a sudden we've got all this young talent, or we've got, you know, LeBron comes here and we've got all these different situations. We've got to kind of roll the ball out with what we have. And what they have right now is really not much. And when you look at the all told sort of talent distribution in the Western Conference, this is one way that we can kind of look at it. I went through this morning our pals at Dunks and Threes, their estimated plus minus metric, right? You look at their, they gauge players like how much you are adding to your team's bottom line over the course of 100 possessions in terms of the net rating. The Warriors have five guys on the roster who are projected to be worth more than 1 point per 100 next season. Two of them are hurt.
Okay.
Jimmy Butler is going to be out for most of the season. One of them is Moses Moody, who's going to be out for most, if not all, of the season. The three healthy ones, there's Steph, there's Kristaps Porzingis, and he's healthy now and check back in a week or two. And Gui Santos, who is, you know, a legitimately nice find in the second round that has extended, of course, over the course of a couple of years now. Nice deal. That's it, right? Not even Draymond, right? Those guys are not projected to be positive contributors moving forward. And then you look at the rest of the Western Conference, and it's OKC has seven of those guys. San Antonio's got seven of those guys. The Rockets have five. The Wolves have five. The Blazers actually have five. This is expecting a lot of Ja Morant, but, you know, these projections. And then it's, where are you at 3, 2, or 1? And it's teams that are like really, it's up in the air. It's Denver after all the defections and the situations they've got going on. Are they a little bit stale? It's the Lakers as they try to rebuild everything after LeBron, and we'll see about Walker Kessler. It's Phoenix. It's Memphis. It's these teams that are kind of like in transition in one way or another. And that's where the Warriors really find themselves. And I think much of the discussion about this week has been, is this the proper way to handle the, you know, the final years, the falling action, the denouement of an all-time great like Stephen Curry? As you've heard everybody kind of talking about that and batting around the ideas, like what jumps out to you in that discussion? Like, is like deserve got nothing to do with it? Is it, you know, a wrong step taken 5 years ago in the butterfly effect? Like, what do you kind of think about when you think about that discussion?
I think about the Dallas Mavericks at the tail end of the Dirk Nowitzki era. I think that's what we're headed for. Dan, I think they looked at Dirk Nowitzki and was like, hey, you've done so much for this organization, the championship. All these years, we're just going to kind of roll it out as you age into approaching 40. And the last 4 years of the Dirk Nowitzki era was, I'm going to read it to you. 42 wins, 33 wins, 24 wins, 33 wins. Okay. They waited. They went through the Yogi Ferrell era. Darren Williams played for a while with those Dallas Mavericks. The Dennis Smith Jr. era, when he was kind of like the next great point guard in the league with the Dallas Mavericks. And then, of course, they land Luka Doncic, and the rest is history. I think Joe Lacob is waiting for his Luka Doncic to fall out of the sky and be the bridge to the next era. And it's not Jaylen Brown. Obviously, they weren't looking for a guy in his prime. I think they're waiting for one of those draft picks that they have to really hit, because it's clear that after this year, there's almost no money on the books for the Warriors. Draymond Green did not sign a multi-year contract, came back for a one-year deal. Stephen Curry is basically an expiring contract at $63 million And if he wants a Dirk-like end of his career, he could probably have it with the Warriors. But sure enough, they were going to have, I think, those 20, 30, 40 win, like averaging what they had last year, 37 wins, I think is what they had in the West last year. Probably somewhere in like the 31, 32 win range with this roster, given all the injury risks of guys at that age. I think that's what we're looking at, Dan, is the end of the Dirk Nowitzki era in Dallas, where they just were kind of, they were not Weekend at Bernie's just throwing him out there, but it was like almost a very sentimental, it's great to have him still in our uniform. But let's be honest, we're not still trying to win a championship here. We just want to continue to pay homage to Dirk and let him finish how he wants to finish his career. Dan, like, that's how I envision this going. As much as teams would like to say that they would like to have Stephen Curry on their team, it's not in a vacuum. Of course you would want Stephen Curry on your team, but at $65 million a year, which is what the extension possibly could look like for Stephen Curry this offseason, I don't know how many teams are going to be lining up for a 38-year-old, 39-year-old Stephen Curry at that kind of number. It would have to be a team like the San Antonio Spurs. If it was going to be a team that's going to make a real chase for Stephen Curry, I think it's a team like the Spurs, where they are already at the top of their game, the top of the conference, and adding Steph for a year or two with a high level defender like Victor Wembanyama, there just aren't a lot of landing spots besides the Golden State Warriors for Stephen Curry. And if he gets hurt or something happens where he's just not going to be 100%, I can understand why Joe Lacob and the front office are just like, you know what? We had an incredible run with Steph Curry, but we don't think his body is at a point where we can rely on him for 100 games again, like we did in 22, to win another championship. So let's go for the Dallas Mavericks run.
I hear that. I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about that, because I think if I was a Warriors fan, I would be looking at that argument and saying, well, we need to find our Luka, our bridge to the next, and saying, well, when you guys had the opportunity to do that, you turned up James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga as your two mid to high lottery picks. And I say that, James Wiseman was in a brutal position as somebody who like barely played in college, was in the middle of the pandemic, was drafted to a team that was like ready made to compete for championships, and as a 19-year-old expected to suddenly play the beautiful game style basketball. Like that was always an unfair expectation of that player, who just wound up in a developmental sinkhole essentially, and then injuries and what sort of came from there. But that is a draft pick, that a pick after him is LaMelo Ball, and I think 8, 9, or 10 picks later is Tyrese Halliburton. And how dramatically different do the Warriors, who are fueled by pace and ball movement and 3-point bombing and feel, look with that being the move, right? Or, and Kuminga, we've talked about this before. Like, that is one of those situations where if he had been drafted into a different circumstance where the requirements of how to play on that, on his team were a little bit more, yeah, use your physicality, use your athleticism. It's not, if you're in the wrong place, you're not going to be playing. You have more opportunity to play through your mistakes. Maybe his first few years go dramatically differently. Maybe there's not the protracted, he said, she said with Steve Kerr, and who's going to be the tug of war over minutes and opportunities or whatever. But that is where it wound up. And a pick after him is Franz Wagner. And I think 10 picks after him or so is Trey Murphy III, who now the Warriors want to go get. And it's going to, but the Pelicans don't want to go trade for, don't want to give him up. And so if the ownership group and the front office that's been empowered by the ownership group are saying, we think the next step is we got to go find our guy, I think I would have a certain amount of discomfort that they will identify that guy accurately and bring that guy in the door. And even setting that aside, we are old enough to remember what the Golden State Warriors brand was like before Stephen Curry arrived there. And the lack of confidence, shall we say, that you had in it, consistently generating positive NBA basketball, right? Like, there was Run TMC, there was We Believe, and that was kind of it for about a 30-year period of Warriors basketball, if not longer. And then this lightning bolt comes out of the sky and transforms everything for you. And to, in the course of watching the waning years of that, say like, we got to start planning for what's next. I get it. I just kind of feel like this is the timeline. It was always the timeline that mattered. You worry about tomorrow when tomorrow gets here, but today you have this guy. And yeah, the version you have now is not the one you had in 2023 or 2024. And in fairness to this brain trust, they did go get Jimmy Butler, right? They were able to, in the transactional chain, yep. It was KD begets D'Lo, begets Andrew Wiggins, begets Jimmy Butler. And that they were awesome. That when those, like when Steph and Jimmy have been on the floor together, the Warriors are 47-21. They're like a 57 win team, win pace with those two guys on the floor together. They won a playoff series with those two guys. They beat a really tough Rockets team. And then Steph's hamstring, you know, yanked on him in the first game against Minnesota, and they never had a shot after that. Last year, they looked pretty good when they had those guys on the floor. And then Jimmy tore his knee up, and that was it. And that's what happens, especially when you're banking on older guys, right? So like where the Warriors find themselves now, it's a bummer, but it's also a bummer that's born of a lot of different components, right? Like the thing that I kept thinking about as I was looking through their roster and through the draft history, it's not just you pick this guy instead of that guy. It's like looking at an NFL team where they've traded up picks over the years. Like I'm going to trade next year's 2 and next year's 4 to move up a few spots in the first round this year. And then a few years later, you look back and you're like, there's all these holes on the depth chart because those picks just never happened. And it's like the last transformative picks the Warriors made came in like 2012. You know, like there was Jordan Poole and then Draymond punched Jordan Poole in the face and Jordan Poole went out of town and he became Chris Paul. And Chris Paul didn't become very much, right? Like there was Patrick Baldwin, who I might be making that name up, but I don't think I am. You know, there's years of just like stuff didn't happen. And now none of that can be turned into something else. None of that can become the bridge. And none of those guys are contributors. And where you're left is like, it's Gui Santos and he's fine, but that's not the bridge, right? And so if you don't have the bridge to what's next, and you're not building anything today, what are we doing here?
That's a great question. What are we doing with the... I mean, why did Steve Kerr want to come back? Did he have any sort of understanding that Steph and he were going to go out together with Draymond Green, take a shot at LeBron James, and that would be a real fun thing to do to recreate the Olympic team in Paris? But they didn't. It's pretty dark there in Golden State when you're looking at a 37, 38-year-old Stephen Curry with Draymond Green on a one-year deal. Steph played 43 games last year, dealing with an assortment of injuries. And yes, he was an all-star because a lot of that was front-loaded in the first half of the season. But it's asking a lot for him to carry a 45-win team, a 50-win team in the Western Conference next year. So that's why I keep saying, it's Dallas all over again. And it worked out that they got Luka Doncic, but there's a lot of teams that were hoping that those ping pong balls would turn up and they would be able to get a franchise cornerstone. And suddenly you're looking at, you're the Sacramento Kings or you're the Minnesota Timberwolves before Anthony Edwards came along. And it's just like, it's very hard to get a KG back in that organization when you're the Minnesota Timberwolves and suddenly you're looking at 20 years in the wilderness and you're hoping that that's not the case with the Warriors given how awesome that run was with Stephen Curry. But I'm afraid they're just going to play out the string here and hope that Stephen Curry has, 50 games in him next year, 60 games, and see how things go. But I really do think that the template is the Dallas Mavericks at the tail end of that Dirk Nowitzki era. I know we're shaking our head because we feel like Steve Kerr and Steph Curry deserve better. I agree. I don't know what's going on there in Golden State. So
in fairness, and I feel like I'm saying in fairness a lot, this is how stuff goes, right? Like very rarely do you, if you are a one organization guy, which I think we're going to see fewer and fewer of those. We're already seeing fewer and fewer of those. And that's not the way of the world moving forward. you don't really go out on top, right? Like, you very rarely do you get, you know, are you walking out on a champion, right? And so Kobe got, he tore his Achilles, and then he got the extension in LA, and that team was no good over the last couple of years, but he went out a hero in that town. Dirk, same thing, as you mentioned. The team's not very good. He goes out a hero in that town. Maybe that is what the future holds for Stephen Curry. I think it is notable to say we are talking today, it's Wednesday, July 29th, a month from today, if I have the date right, is when Steph is eligible for an extension of his current contract. He can sign it. I'm sure whatever he wants, the Warriors would say, go for it. Or he could say, I don't want to do that right now. I don't really feel like Stephen Curry has never been the exert leverage over the organization type guy. Like, that's net. He's more, much more Duncan than, you know, insert player movement avatar here. And that said, you know, you mentioned, I don't think there's a lot of teams that are going to have an appetite for Steph at age 39 at $65 million. We just saw a pretty good old guy decide, maybe the best way for me to exert my player power at this point in my career is to say, I'll just go to free agency. And yeah, it doesn't have to be $65 million. It can be $5 million. And I get to pick the team that I think has the best chance of winning a championship. Will Stephen Curry use the LeBron James playbook here? I would be skeptical of it, just because that has not been where Steph has gone to this point. And every public comment he's ever made is about wanting to be the, I finish everything in Golden State. But if what Stephen Curry wants is to continue to try to compete for championships, I think he has to take a hard look at the set of circumstances here. He's already said, he said it to Marcus Thompson, like, I'm a realist about this stuff. And the reality is that it's not just, you know, trying to chase rings. It's like the greener pastures for competition look like they're going to be elsewhere right now.
Are you saying the decision, Stephen Curry 2027, is what you're describing? Maybe he joins up with LeBron. Why did LeBron keep your third eye open on this? Why did LeBron want a 2-year deal as opposed to just a 1-year
fingers?
Deal?
There we go. To get into my camera, right? My windy fingers
Why
are up.
Why would LeBron decide to do a 2-year deal in Philly with Bob Myers and Stephen Curry has an expiring contract? We'll see what happens with that extension. That is what we call a tease in the business. We'll see what happens with the extension for Stephen Curry, whether it happens or not, whether he just decides, I'm good. We'll see what happens in free agency next year. I feel like a lot of us in the media that covered those Warriors championships and watched Steph do what he did with the Warriors and in Team USA basketball a couple years ago, just wish we had one more run with Steph Curry playing with elite players again. And I don't think Draymond Green has enough left in the tank. I don't think that as good as Pods is or Santos is, I just... Kristaps Porzingis with his body in that state, I just don't think that what we're going to see in Golden State is high-level basketball. And it is, again, why did Steve Kerr come back to this? And I guess maybe if you ride off into the sunset with Steph Curry, that's what you're ultimately signing up for. 1 year left on the deal. We'll see what happens.
Also,
Dan?
Also, just real quick on that. Competitive sickos are competitive sickos, right? We thought that Pop was going to leave when Duncan retired, and he came back and started trying to coach for several more years. Like, you know, it's these guys are wired differently. True. Even though we don't think that way about the coaches, but they're wired different too. Sorry, by all means, land the plane, Tom Haberstroh.
Well, yes, I am. I just dropped off my daughter at camp, sleepaway camp, and so this is a weird time for me. I've never had this as a father. This is the off season in ways that I have never had, and I did. I kept it together, Dan. First time she's gone for 10 days, 11 days, and I'm proud of my off season so far. I don't know about yours, if you have any new additions to the family or anything like that, but it's been a fun off season over here.
Yeah, we adopted a pit bull named Griselda, who I'm hopeful it didn't turn up on the mics, but she absolutely ate it trying to climb onto the bed just now. So we should probably wrap this up pretty fast.
Griselda. You okay, girl? You all right?
She's okay. She's okay.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. Take care of your pup. Everyone take care of yourselves. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the off season. LeBron James finally decided, and so we can get on with our lives a little bit. Thank you to Emmy, Ryan, Brad behind the scenes, everybody at Yahoo Sports, the production squad, All-Star squad. Thank you so much for making this show every week a reality. And check us out on YouTube, Yahoo NBA, the channel. We just hit over 7,000 subscribers there. Let's keep jacking that up. And we will talk next week here at The Big Number.